The expected top today where we are was 27. My goodness, it looks like we're going to make it. Gavin Morris joins me to talk about this and the possibility of looking down the barrel at an El Nino. Hello, Gavin.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm actually out of my balcony at the moment, works balcony, and it is just glorious. What a stunning late April day it is ahead of this cold front that is moving in over southeastern Australia.
Gavin, they tell us, is there a possibility that if we get to 27 degrees in certain areas, we'll break records again as the warmest, latest day in April for X amount of years?
Yeah, certainly has the potential to do that, particularly over the last few years because they were colder than average. So, yeah, I'd say by the end of today that there'll be a number of locations that haven't experienced these kind of temperatures for a very long time this late in the season, very much so.
And what's going to happen tonight? There is a cold front coming through and we're expected to see cooler weather and rain over the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. We've had these near stationary trough lines. They've weakened, they've stalled, they've just been sitting over the southeast corner of the nation. But there's a fast-moving front that's been moving across the Bight, and that's actually going to catch up with that. It's already triggering some thunderstorms across the Riverina, the southern areas of New South Wales. So it's starting to get somewhat unsettled, and it will continue to do so. It'll really organise itself by the time we get into this afternoon. And you should see a very nice line of clouds sitting diagonally right across New South Wales. And that is going to start to produce a decent-sized rain band, and that will start funneling down over mostly the southeast corner of New South Wales. That is where all of the warnings are, and that is the area that is likely to be hit the hardest because a low is going to form as we move into Sunday, and that is going to be, you know, quite intense, and we'll see some large accumulations and flooding there throughout that southern corner of New South Wales. So Sydney maybe yet is seeing some of that activity, but more so the further south you are. So the Illawarra, Shoalhaven, right across the southern New South Wales highlands, again, will come under threat of accumulations of over 100 millimetres and the likelihood of flooding. So the areas north of that shouldn't be hit as severely. But look, as we move into Saturday afternoon, there is going to be widespread rain that will move right across northern New South Wales, and that includes the Greater Hunter into that northern coastal area of New South Wales. Unlikely to be hit as hard. That rain band will run out of gusto there, it'll run out of energy, but it's the southern half of the state that's really going to cop it. Most of the southeast, Victoria, etc., is seeing it, but yeah, that is the area of concern, is that southeastern corner of New South Wales.
Gavin, after years of wet seasons, Australia's looking increasingly likely to be hit by drier than usual conditions, potentially as we get closer to winter. We're talking El Nino, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. That's what, you know, what we're expecting now. A below average rain overall throughout the nation as a whole. But saying that, so many areas and so much of the population lives in such a short distance to the coast. And as long as those sea surface temperatures are warm, there is going to be the threat of flooding, as we're going to see unfold over the weekend across southern New South Wales. Because of the combination that happens around this time of year, we have these upper-level cold pool features, as we're going to see unfold over the weekend, and they can form these intense lows, and we can see quite large amounts of rain because there's so much energy in that ocean in the form of warm water. So cold air in the upper part of the atmosphere coming over that, well, it's all, you know, then getting drawn up and the lows form, and then it can be dumped back in across the coastal areas. So those threats are going to continue as long as we see these abnormally high sea surface temperatures, because it's still really nice in for a swim along much of the East Coast because of that East Australian current still running very, very hot as all of that very warm water from the Coral Sea funnels down from the south just off the East Coast.
It's funny, isn't it? We forget so quickly about the weather we had last year, this time last year. I mean, it was rain, 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 and it was the year before it was rain, 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 and I think it was the year before it was rain, rain, rain. And all of a sudden, we're starting to see drier conditions, and we only sort of remember the dry conditions, don't we? God, it was dry for so long, because I suppose just drought, unless you're immediately affected by severe floods, and we don't wish to make light of that whatsoever, but unless you're immediately affected by the floods that we have seen in the areas across, you know, New South Wales, etc., you just remember the dry conditions, don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, but it's a hard one, because so most of the river systems, which was truly extraordinary. Most of the river systems that led back into the Murray-Darling system, ran at capacity at some time or experienced some form of flooding. And again, for our inland communities, most inland towns are on a river for a reason. It's the same as like the coastal communities, are on the coast. Everyone likes to be near the water, and the water flows and it moves. And that's the issue with living inland. The rivers aren't as consistent as sea levels. The sea levels are what they are, and they move, of course, with tides, and powerful storms can cause those storm surges along the coast. But river systems, low-lying areas, floodplains that haven't flooded for so long, and that's what we experience. We'd almost forgotten about some of those floodplain areas, and since communities have grown buildings. And there's been generations, families that have lived in areas that have never flooded. They've never experienced it, but they've forgotten that they are actually on a flood plain. And in Australia, it's actually quite low. It's quite flat. And we can go for these very long periods of no flooding across those flatland areas. But when it does come, it comes hard and it comes fast.
And do you know something, not meaning to get political at all, but with all of the rain that we've received in the recent years, guess what? We haven't built another dam.
No, well, we're building more desalination plants, aren't we? There's another one that's on the plans that will be built near the Newcastle region down there, and they're very, very expensive to build and very, very expensive to run.
And you got to run them all the time, otherwise they just clog up, as they say.
Yeah, well, they turn them off. They sit there and then they wait, and then firing them back up, they absorb a huge amount of energy because it's all about pressure, really. I mean, it's friction. You're forcing salt water through membranes until it becomes crystal clear, and that takes a lot of energy to do that. But, and it really, they don't produce a huge amount of, water, but they're being built rather than building dams at this point.
I want to ask you a question which has got a little bit to do with weather, but not a lot. Last weekend, my wife and I went for a walk along the water, and at the top of the hill at King Edward Park there was a bloke and his mate, and he was trying to get up in the air. Now, I don't know what you call this. It wasn't a kite. It was one of those, like a half parachute. Is there a name for those things?
It's a paraglider.
A paraglider. Okay.
Yeah.
He was trying to get up a paraglider because obviously the wind conditions were, were good for him. And I was watching him from a distance. My wife and I were watching him trying to get up in the air. And the way he was using it was trying to throw the half parachute, the paraglider, up and catch the wind and hope it would go up and he would, go up with it. But on several occasions, that didn't happen. He didn't get hurt, but the wind got hold of the parachute and threw it almost at force on a couple of occasions back down to the ground. And I said to my wife, does this just happen close to the ground? What if you're up there in the seat and that happens while you're in the seat? Does that happen or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I consider that a no-fly day, and there's a bad accident actually that day because, down here on the surface, we think that the air just moves out of the north, south, to east, west direction. But when you're aloft, the air is moving up and down and up and down a lot. Because of thermic activity, you have areas that heat up faster than other areas, or you've got, the hot side of a building, the sun has hit it. On the other side of the building, it's shaded and it's cold. So the air on the sunny hot side, well, that's rising air, but on the other side, that's where the air will be falling. So when you have those big cloud days, and that day that you're talking about probably had some of those big clouds, clouds are forming under that premise that the rising air is forming the cumulus clouds, but in between where it's blue and it's clear, that is where the air is cooled and it's falling back to the earth. So the air is moving up and down, and in between that upward flow and that downward flow, it's called wind shear, and it gets very, very bumpy. So it gets somewhat rough when you're going in and out of those thermals. So yes, everything that goes up must come down.
So, literally, he could be up in the air having a wonderful time, and all of a sudden, the wind changes, and that parachute or half-parachute paraglider, it just falls out of the sky.
Yeah, well, it's a cram air wing. So the wing is formed on the leading edge of the wing. Air pressure comes in and forms that the wing. So, you know, when you have, rough air, some of that wing can partially collapse or completely collapse into full frontal. And, yeah, it can become quite nasty. So, you know, like myself, I've all gone all the way through. I'm an advanced pilot. We do these intense training courses. They're called SIVs. And we actually purposely collapse our wing. And then we learn how to, you know, best chances of controlling it, getting it under control, and then for it to fly again. If that is not attainable, hopefully you've got enough height, and we carry emergency chutes as well. And that's more of just a parachute. You throw that and then you come back down to the surface rather than having that cram air wing, which is above a paraglider. So, yeah, it's a wild sport. It is aviation. It is dangerous. And, yeah, you've got to know what you're doing.
Is that the type of vehicle that you actually fly?
It is. It is.
There you go.
So, I fly an advanced wing. So I fly just a two line. I don't have many lines. So I'm looking for less drag,
right,
less friction, and my wing is a lot bigger. It's longer. So you have beginner wings. And the beginner wings, well, they don't collapse very easily. They're very difficult. They're very hard to collapse. But mine somewhat more collapsible because mine has a better glide ratio. It's faster, so I can fly further. But, yeah, the catch is that it's more susceptible to collapses, et cetera. But, you know, we're trained for it. And, not to say it won't happen. It's a part of the game. You know, look, if you're going to, you know, raise both feet off the surface of the earth, there's a high probability chance that someday something is going to go wrong. You know, it's kind of like horse riding. It's like motorbike riding. It's a sport where you have to really be on your toes the whole time and understand the dangers and do everything that you can to avoid those.
We watched him get into the air, then we continued our walk, and we were probably going for, I don't know, an hour, and on the way back he'd landed and he was sitting on the hill next to his mate and they were talking, and I said to my wife, well, he obviously enjoyed his ride and he's back down on terra firma safe, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on the cliff faces, there's two different kinds of flying. That is called orographic lift. The air is hitting the cliff face and it's being forced upward, so you're riding that like a wave. But what I love the inland, where you launch off a mountain. And then you go out and you search for those thermals. So you're looking for that rising column of air. You circle in it, and then you climb up to the cloud base, which is, you know, up to 10,000 feet. And then you go on glide, and then you look for another one, and then try and travel hundreds of kilometres across this vast country. And that's what I absolutely love.
All right, Gavin. I love it. Thanks for always making yourself available. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure. Enjoy the weekend.
See you, mate. Bye-bye.